Yes, indeed. Well, spending a lot of Bob Kraft's money, but yeah, they had it sitting around anyway. It's been quite a week for the New England Patriots, and to help us try and make sense of it all, we're joined by Christopher Price of the Boston Globe. Chris, how are you?
I would have gone with For the Love of Money by the OJs, but that works well also.
Oh, yeah, you can't go wrong with either one.
Either one. I think we're in good shape.
So there was money, and now there are other moves going on. Let's see, where to begin? Let's start with who's back. Kyle Van Noy, 1 year away, was enough for him.
Yeah, you know what's really interesting, Rich, and I'm going to write about this a little bit more, that, and I think part of it is just because Belichick's been around for so long, but there is a growing list of guys who have played in New England, left, and decided to come back over the last like decade or so, and he's just the latest one. I mean, this offseason so far, we've seen Ted Karras and Trent Brown. You know, you go all the way back to guys like Deion Branch, and you know, Martellus Bennett came back for a game. It's one of those long-running things where I think the grass isn't always greener. I also think that there's a comfort level back in New England. So Van Noy adds to that already long, impressive list. And, you know, with Van Noy there and Hightower, I think that you are back to where you want to be at the linebacker position if you're the Patriots. Then you add in, you know, some of the younger guys, you know, Winovich, Jennings, Uche, those types. You're looking at a pretty deep position.
One of those guys who left and came back and did what few do, Patrick Chung, who I think had certainly a better second go-round with the Patriots than the first, announced his retirement. No big surprise there, but he had quite a career as a member of the Patriots.
He really did, and I'm always, Rich, I remain eternally fascinated at his career arc, and I talked to him a couple times about it. He was one of those guys who, after he left, and he was, you know, he became available again, that he kind of sat down and had a, you know, heart to heart with Belichick, and just kind of said, okay, look, you know, I think there was both a mea culpa on both sides that, you know, we didn't do this right the first time, and I think his second go around was far more successful than his first. I'll also say this too: the 2009 draft, in hindsight, was spectacularly unspectacular, I think, for a lot of teams, but for the Patriots to be able to get Patrick Chung, Julian Edelman, and Sebastian Fulmer out of that draft, I think that, you know, with a dozen or so years later, I think that turned out to be a pretty good draft. But yeah, Chung, when I think of Chung, I think of a guy who is absolutely tough as nails, a guy who was just a fierce hitter. He wasn't quite in the mold of a Rodney Harrison type, but I think that he put together a really impressive career highlighted by those Super Bowl wins here in New England.
Well, this week the Patriots certainly addressed some needs, and let's start with guys who can catch the ball. They added greatly to the wide receiver core. Who's the biggest impact guy that they added?
I think right now the biggest impact guy is probably Hunter Henry, at least on the offensive side of the ball. You know, looking at what he's been able to do over the course of his career, and that's not to slight Jonnu Smith, but I think you're looking really at two tight ends who are capable of 50-plus catches a year, I think, in this offense. And you know, I think that we're all going to talk an awful lot about going forward the possibilities of how to best utilize the two of them. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Henry in more of a quote-unquote traditional tight end role. That is to say, you know, flush against the tackle, you know, and you know, working as a blocker and kind of, you know, working in the pass game, obviously. The guy who intrigues me and the guy who I think has the largest ceiling, the highest ceiling, actually, is Smith, because he's not only capable of the same sort of production offensively, but he's a little bit more flexible in terms of his overall positional versatility. I think that, you know, the biggest thing for me is the fact that they put him in the backfield, you know, a handful of times last year. They moved him around a little bit. This is a guy who can do an awful lot of things. But so I think basically statistically, Hunter Henry probably has the highest ceiling, but I think Jonnu Smith is going to be the guy who is really bears watching, because again, if you remember back with the Gronkowski Hernandez two tight end sets, they move Hernandez around an awful lot. I think, you know, they're prepared to use Jonnu Smith in a little bit of the same fashion in terms of where they may hide him on the field from time to time.
So the Patriots at that position have gone from the cupboard being bare to now apparently overstocked enough that it looks like they can trade Ryan Izzo to Houston.
Yeah, and honestly, if I was Dalton Keene and Devin Asiasi, I would change my lease to a month-to-month as opposed to a year-to-year. at least at this point, because, you know, if you're trading Ryan Izzo, and look, I think both of them would agree, you know, Asiasi and Keane, you know, they struggled to kind of get it last year. And I understand that it was a truncated offseason and there were all sorts of obstacles. But, you know, all of a sudden, like you said, you know, you go from a very thin position to, a position that's very, very deep. And so I don't know if they're going to keep them both. I don't know if they're going to find something. I think Keane can be moved around a little bit. I know he can play some fullback, and so I think there might be a role for him. I'm going to be fascinated to see what they end up doing with Asiasi. And, you know, I think all of a sudden, those guys, there's a lot more urgency for them to get on the same page as the rest of the offensive unit than there might have been if these moves hadn't been made.
We're talking with Chris Price of the Boston Globe here on Downtown. Well, the Patriots also address some defensive needs this week with some new additions to the roster. Who's the one guy there that you think will make the biggest difference?
Judon. And he was the guy who, out of all of these moves, I think surprised me the most, because you can kind of draw a line between, you know, need and opportunity with a lot of these players, or most of these players. You know, there are guys like Jalen Mills who has exceptional level of versatility, and I think he'll fit in very, very well in New England, for example. You know, Godshaw, they needed a guy who could help stop the run, and I think he's going to come in and, you know, be asked to do a lot of that. But Judon is a guy who has been able to show, when he's been healthy, a consistent ability to pressure the passer, a consistent ability to kind of hold that edge, really cave in the pocket a little bit. And so he's going to be the guy who I think at the very least is going to have the greatest opportunity to put up some really impressive numbers here in New England. I think he's capable of being a double-digit sack guy. So, again, I want to see how we all what kind of comes together, you know, with Dietrich Wise and Chase Winovich and maybe John Simon. I would like to see John Simon back to maybe add some depth at that position. But I think Judon ultimately has a chance to make the greatest impact on defense for New England in 2021.
Now the biggest set of questions are centered, I think, around the offensive line. Is that something they'll address through trades, through free agency, or can they plug some holes with the draft?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit of everything. It really, I think that at least on the surface, you feel like you're in pretty good shape now. Look, you know, the loss of Tooney is kind of mitigated a little bit, and I'm holding my thumb and my forefinger here, you know, like 1/16th of an inch apart, by the you know, the fact that Owenu did so well last year, the fact you still have Shaq Mason, the fact that you re-signed a guy in Ted Karras who has some positional versatility along the interior. So, you know, you can kind of make it work. I would love to find a way for them to re-sign Andrews, although I think it might be a bit of a lost cause at this point. He's so important to what they've done over the last handful of years. So, you know, a captain, a team leader, a very important guy, both on and off the field, you know, for that franchise. But, you know, if they do have to move on, I think you're going to end up seeing Ted Karras handle the bulk of the duties at the center position. And then you feel better about where you are probably at the tackle position right now with Trent Brown specifically. And, you know, you can either have a win, you move out to the tackle spot, or, you know, you give Isaiah Wynn another chance. Really, the bottom line, I think, Rich, on the offensive line, is you have a lot of guys who can do multiple things, and that's always a good thing, whether it's injury, whether it's personnel-related, whatever the case may be. You have some guys who can do multiple things, and I think that's going to help down the road.
Now, I personally liked the signing of Cam Newton. It's a fairly small investment. I felt like it gave them a little bit of leverage going forward. What's your take on it?
Yeah, it does. It gives them leverage, but I think too, and this is my big theory here, Rich. They're clearing off, they're adding all of these guys, and they have all of this draft capital, and it's setting up for them to be able to make a deal with someone else with all of that draft capital. I always think back to 2007, and the situations are kind of similar, I think, and at least from my perspective, where that draft was a dud, but you got so much either in trade or free agency beforehand, you ended up getting a bunch of guys. You got 9 guys in that draft. Really, you know, 8 of them weren't even impact players. And the 9th, Brandon Merriweather, was, you know, didn't have this great long career in New England. So I think, you know, the lesson here is, if you don't have spots for guys going into the draft, I'm not saying that the draft is going to be a complete washout, but you take some of that draft capital. You take some of those draft positions. You have 4 picks in the top 121. You offer them to, you know, for example, to Houston for Deshaun Watson. You offer them to San Francisco for Jimmy Garoppolo. You offer them to Seattle for Russell Wilson, whatever the case may be. that gives you an opportunity to get that quarterback that you need. I like Newton, and I'm going to be fascinated to see what he can do in New England with a collection of offensive talent around him that's better than, you know, what they had last year. But I still think they're setting themselves up to get a bigger, a better, a, you know, a marquee quarterback down the road.
Now, this was planned this week. This wasn't an impulse buy. It wasn't like you're at the supermarket and checkout and go, yes, I do need four dozen batteries because they're on sale. They had planned for a while to use this money.
Yeah, and you know the Belichick vengeance tour, I think, is a fun and easy narrative to use in the wake of the Super Bowl where he saw Tom Brady have the success and it kind of stuck in his craw. But there were a number of things that came together, to your point. You know, there was timing involved. They had a lot of cap space, and there were a lot of guys in areas of need that they were able to target, you know, moving forward. So it was a combination of things, and it really underscores the fact that when it comes to team building, you need good timing to, you know, to be involved in that. And the Patriots were able to get good timing. I always fall back, though, on the John Wooden phrase, don't mistake activity for achievement. So, you know, we don't know if these guys are going to, you know, amount to really, you know, anything. If it's going to amount to a Super Bowl, it's going to amount to a deep playoff run. But at the same time, just in terms of sheer volume, I've never seen them make this many moves, you know, in one 36-hour span. So I think when you talk about Patriots history and specifically Belichick history, it was an extraordinary stretch, and I'm going to be fascinated to see if it ultimately all pays off.
All right, away from football, Chris, I'm so excited for your next book. Tell us a little bit, if you can, about Bleeding Green, A History of the Hartford Whalers.
Oh, Rich, I'm so happy you brought that up. I am over the moon about this. As a kid who grew up in Connecticut in the 70s and 80s, and the early 90s before I came to college in Boston, I was a Whalers fan, and it's been such a kick to be able to interview all of these guys who I grew up watching and grew up idolizing. You know, I've spent some time with almost 70 people now who are connected with the franchise, media, players, coaches. You know, I talked to some super fans. It's been an absolute blast to be able to go back and revisit that. And it's for me, I think the biggest thing, and I hope this comes through in the book, is that the Whalers now still resonate for a lot of people in trying to find out why. And it goes beyond the cool logo and brass bonanza, it, you know, all of that, that it was one of those really fun memories for people, for players, for fans. And they tried to make it work as long as possible, you know, 25 years in New England. And there's still a lot of memories. There's still a lot of feelings. And there's still a lot of depth of feeling. I'll say this too, man. You look at those 85, 86, 87 Whalers, and there's a case to be made that they were the smartest team in the history of the NHL, because half of that roster now, roughly half of that roster now, is involved in coaching in some form or fashion. You know, whether it's Ron Francis running the team out in Seattle, you know, Joe Quenneville with the Blackhawks, Dean Evason, Stu Gavin, Mike Liut is one of the most important player agents in the league. And so, you know, Ray Ferraro's on TV every night. So you have a bunch of guys who were not only, you know, great and talented, and it all kind of came together and meshed very nicely for them. They've all gone on to, I don't want to say bigger and better things, but they've all stayed in the game and they've all made an imprint in the game. So but short answer, Rich, it's been a blast to do, and I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to having everybody read it when it comes out in October of 2022.
Yeah, I can't wait for it myself. That's fantastic. Oh, and by the way, we'll let you know here that we've kicked off our 9th annual Downtown Madness, our just for fun competition for people to pick their favorite guest on the show. And you're out there right now up against, fellow Patriots writer Ryan Hannibal of WEEI in the opening round.
Oh, who is the guy who devised that matchup? Oh, that breaks my heart. Oh, Ryan's my guy. We worked together for so long.
I know. The committee is cruel, Chris. What can I tell you?
It really is. Oh, my gracious. That's going to be a tough one. Well, I'm keeping my fingers crossed. Ryan's put together a really impressive body of work, you know, ever since he broke in. But hopefully, you know, I can advance past the first round this year. Fingers crossed.
We wish you luck in that. And as always, love talking Patriots with you. Thanks so much for being with us today, Christopher. We'll do it again soon.
My pleasure. Take care, and we'll talk soon.
That is Chris Price of the Boston Globe here on Downtown.